I'm freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
What have we here?
Go fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Welcome, everybody, to Eat Sleep Elite. This is another pay-per-view post-show. I'm one of your hosts, Charlie, joined, as always, by the ultimate good brother, my podcasting vegan entrepreneur himself, Duke. How's it going, Duke?
How's it going? Hey, fellas.
So, double or nothing time, and we are not alone, as I think this is two or three pay-per-views in a row, maybe? We are joined by our other good brother, Dart. How's it going, Dart?
Also known as Wardlow.
I'm back, guys. Special guest Wardlow last time.
This is my second pay-per-view. I am going to attempt to make every pay-per-view show.
Let's go.
If I can. But Wardlow is back. Never fear. The pinnacle of AEW.
That I can't help but agree with. So, look, the show just...
We're big fans of Wardlow here.
The show just ended. It's literally as off the press as it possibly could be for us. So we're going to waste
15 minutes ago, I think, maybe.
Yeah. We're going to waste no time and jump right in. So for the buy-in, I'm just going to hit the match results and we're going to move on. We had Harley Cameron and Anna Jay defeat Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. Penelope Ford was the one pinned by Harley Cameron's finishing move, which apparently the camera missed. So that's funny.
Oh, my short printed card just went up in value after that win.
Yeah. And then we had the RPG Vice and crew versus the ROH champion Bandido, AR Fox, and Los Titans del Are. And the babyfaces picked up the victory here with Bandido hitting the 21 plex and got the pin on Andretti. So that was it for the buy-in. Quick, easy stuff. Bandido got the biggest pop.
Can I say one thing about that buy-in?
Yeah.
When did they change Roppongi Vice to RPG Vice?
Literally in the last two weeks on TV.
Because I heard them say RPG Vice in the middle of the show, and I'm like, who is RPG Vice?
Since when? Our theory is trademark based.
I've said to Charlie. I actually don't know why that would be a problem, since Rocky is literally part of the legal department. It feels like in New Japan. So, obviously he's not a lawyer.
And they use that name for Roppongi 3K, which was show and tell. So, I don't know. Don't know.
It really just depends, you know.
But let's get into our opening contest here of the actual pay-per-view, where we had Mercedes Moné taking on Jamie Hayter in the finals of the Women's Owen Hart Foundation Tournament. Okay. For starters, 20-minute-plus match. This match was everything you kind of wanted out of it. They were beating the ever-living shit out of each other, and Jamie Hayter looked... like, she just looked like an absolute beast. Like, we've been kind of, you know, Jamie hasn't had a chance to get into the spotlight since she's been back. And this was opening the pay-per-view, as big of a spotlight as you really can have. And I thought she looked fantastic in there. And Mercedes continues this hot run where, look, we get to the end of the match here and she dodged a Haterade three times, goes for the tombstone. Jamie Hayter floats over and hits one of her own for two. Mercedes gets a shoulder up by less than half an inch. Hayter winds up for the Haterade. Mercedes spins out, spikes her with a DDT into a cradle for the flash pin. Brutal fucking DDT. And Mercedes sprints up the ramp, holds the trophy, and she's the Owen Hart champion. So she's our fourth winner. Our winners include now Britt Baker, Willow Nightingale. What do I always blank on last year's? Mariah May and Mercedes. So 4-for-4
blank
in the tournament.
Blank on last year's because last year was Destiny.
I just always fucking, for some reason, I'm like, okay, Britt, Willow. And then I'm like, fuck. No, but Duke, let me toss it to you. What'd you think of the match? And what'd you think of the result? Hayter hits hard.
Shout out Tony Khan for somehow managing to make this women's Owens tournament so fucking memorable that you forgot about the destiny of Mariah May being fulfilled. Like,
It led to the best storyline last year.
No, I understand. It was also tied up in like a 9 to 10 month storyline between her and Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa. So, you know, like, it's like that. I understand it got mixed up in a lot of other stuff, but at the same time, this match was just unbelievable. I mean, like, I couldn't believe what was, you know what to expect on paper when you get these two, you know, and I don't know if we expected it to be as good as the one that we had with Mercedes and Athena, like 4 or 5 weeks ago or whatever it was.
Back-to-back 20-minute plus matches.
Yes. So, just a great opener to the show. I mean, obviously, it's not technically the opener because there was, pre-show, but whatever. The main card opener. And this, I think, really shot out of a gun. And like you said, the hard hitting was there. I think heading into this match, I don't know specifically. I mean, I know, Dart, you said that you had Jamie Hayter going into this as well. But I didn't really have, a gauge of, we didn't really talk that too deeply about it. I was just like, oh, what do you think, you know? Well, so when I toss it over to you, Dart, I guess that's a good place for you to start is where are we all at right now? Because obviously talk about the match, Dart. But I mean, I got to tell you, I don't love the result as much as I love Mercedes and the run that she's on. I just don't necessarily I don't know where we go with Jamie from here. It kind of bothers me to an extent that I don't,
Yeah, I feel indifferent about it. When we first made our little predictions, not on the pod about this, I said Jamie Hayter versus Mercedes or Jamie Hayter versus it wasn't Stat because Stat was on Jamie's side, right?
I think Stat versus Mercedes or Jamie versus Mercedes.
Yeah. I think I put Jamie versus Mercedes, but it was just I'm not in love with the result because I think Jamie Hayter deserves it. Not saying that Mercedes doesn't.
Of course.
But I mean, Mercedes has been on this just hot run, and I've been saying they're saving her first loss in AEW for a rather big moment, and I think that just solidified it today. Matter if it's against Tony, which I hope it's not. Kind of, I kind of want four belts Monet, but at the same time, I hope Tony wins. But I don't know how to feel.
It gets hard for me, especially when I'm thinking about the TBS title into this. Yeah. If she doesn't have the TBS title, I am all on board. Look, she's on the hottest run of any of the women's wrestlers. Yes, you keep it going. And I only say that because she beat Athena. If she didn't beat Athena or she met Athena in the final, I feel a little different, but she beat her. So her hot streak continues. I always get a little worried that now we're tossing both belts together. So that means, Mercedes was already guaranteed a match on this show, whether it was defending the TBS title or not. But now we got both titles merged together. What does that mean? That part of it, I hope we get figured out.
I'm thinking she has to lose that title sometime between now and All In. I know that sounds like this, so cheese, but I just feel like we don't want both of those titles being locked.
Here's the thing we run into. Who the fuck possibly beats her?
And there's people.
Yeah,
we have Grand Slam Mexico coming up. We have other big TV shows like Fighter Fest. And what was the other one that you mentioned, Charlie?
I don't think
Summer Blockbuster, but it could be combined.
They're going to put Mercedes's first loss.
Well, the New Japan title, they had TV someone else show. Take the what pin.
Sky Blue just came back, though. And Sky Blue looks like she might be about to be going on a run. Or maybe, we've had Julia Hart be a previous TBS champion,
Yeah, they could do the four-way thing again and someone else gets pinned.
That's absolutely the way you do it.
That's what they did with her New Japan title.
Throw Tony in that match.
Yeah.
And make it a four-way with Tony in there because you're already mixing the titles anyway, and that adds a dimension to it, And maybe her the reason why she's tossing because she's focused on her,
Gets into this predicament a lot.
They back themselves into a corner way too much.
It's too hard because you have two great wrestlers as your champions and you want them to fight each other. But you got to pick and choose your opportunities. It's just have one of them lose it.
This is very much from the Tony Khan school of I'm going to have my cake and eat it too. And you just can't sometimes, sometimes you have to pick. Unfortunately, it sucks. But
there's definitely a philosophy with his booking. And this is proven now where he wants the champions, no matter what belt they're holding, to be featured in these big spots. That's why he put Danny in the Continental Classic Tournament. That's why he had Will as the international champion face Swerve for the world championship. He does this multiple times. He wants those titles to get elevated in a sense, I'm guessing. but he doesn't want them to be seen as blockers. And maybe we're just too used to it being felt as a blocker. But the reality is, Mercedes, should she have won this? Probably. But that's only because now we're open to A, the both titles thing, and B, I don't... Jamie's got to really... I mean, what does she do? And I mean, we're going to be able to speculate on this for the next fucking 7 weeks, because I think Jamie's got to make this show. I think her only hope is really Mariah, but I just... With Mariah not showing up tonight, I think a lot of stuff's on the wall for her. Is it Tekla? Is she going to be Tekla's first opponent?
You know what? I just thought of something even worse about this, and I don't mean to like harp on this and make it like be an asshole about this.
No, but
just,
we've talked. The match was great, but no, the match was great. Realistically, about what happened at the results. Yes.
And here's what just popped into my head: you have to have her lose the TBS Championship before she wins the world title, because we're going to sit here and pretend like she's not. She's going to win the world title and fuck it all.
She's winning the world title,
absolutely winning it, because it's going to be huge for the company's history and for her career. So, and
she should be the world champion.
So if she doesn't lose that championship, we are now in a scenario where, yes, AEW does have a really great women's division. Now both championships are on one person. And as we said, her first loss has to be something big. So she can't just drop the TBS to somebody randomly if we use that philosophy. So or that child just becomes trapped forever until either she gets hurt, which is more likely what happens, because I don't see them taking it off her when she's a super champion, you know, like, and...
So, I mean, look, he still hasn't taken the belt off of Athena, and I don't know what's happening there.
Well, that's probably just never coming off. I hate to say it. She's probably locked to that title.
AK, or, like, relinquish it like Asuka did.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Fuck.
Dart, you had a thought?
Yeah, go ahead.
I kind of forgot. Not gonna
lie. That's all right. I didn't mean to barrel over you.
No. No. it popped into my head, and then it went away.
One of those. Oh, the Fatal 4-Way. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of TV specials, so...
The Fatal 4-Way might be the way we bail out of this, honestly.
We might just be totally overthinking this. Yeah. They got to figure something else. They got to figure something out. I think All In is way too big. Because we all know the reality of this. That TBS titles is a guaranteed women's match on the show. The reality is...
We haven't talked about the double duty idea. If she does that, I'm so down. You know what I mean? If she wrestles twice at fucking All In, I'm so fucking in.
She easily
could.
She's that great. And with the run she's on, forget about it. But all right, let's move on. That was
let's move.
And I think a lot of people are going to have some fun discussions about that match. So, and the result especially. So yeah, let us know what you think. If you guys are on Spotify or Blue Sky, you can hit us up and let us know. Jumping into our next result, we had FTR versus Daniel Garcia and Nigel McGuinness. Holy fucking time! By the way, third longest match on the show. Really, this thing got a lot of time to breathe. They were able to work the fun story here of FTR just really punishing Nigel and bringing in commentary into it. And FTR doing like they always do. They give you the comedy with it too, because Dax is fucking great at comedy and he knows perfect timing. So, but this was, Duke, this was a fucking slugfest. And
yeah.
They beat the shit out of them, and they got the technical submission. Yeah, Danny passed out. So, I mean, I'm going to toss it to you, because I know we've talked a lot about Dax and Nigel finally getting in the ring together. What did you think of the match, and can you believe how long it went?
Okay, well, I'm glad you fucking see. I know exactly what you're doing there with that. So right before this match came on, I was like, all right, boys, I hate where this match is on the card. There's no way this gets time. Because I'm going to call this, and I'm dubbing this now. This is the Jericho spot. Go back and look at a bunch of AEW pay-per-view. He's in the second slot on way too many of them, and I'm not even kidding. I don't know how it keeps happening, but that's where Jericho ends up on the pay-per-view. Anyway.
This has got to be the first Double or Nothing no Jericho, by the way.
That sounds right. It's probably true. I mean, what is he doing right now? Is he doing Fozzy stuff, maybe? I have no idea.
I think so.
Probably. But anyway, yeah, no. So the Jericho spot, quote unquote. So you know, use that if you want, I guess. But yeah, no, I thought they weren't getting time for sure because of where this is on the card. Just not because AEW does that particularly, but just in general in wrestling. I feel like if you're spot number two, especially after the match we just had, I was like, yeah, they're probably going to need to cool down a little bit. But nope, not at all. They just said, fuck it. We're going balls to the wall again. So, hey, I'm down.
They waited a little bit to cool down.
Well, yeah. True, you know. But that's something AEW has done in the past where we do the ramp up. And then, you know, it crescendos with something like, you know, the Anarchy in Arena. And then we have to cool down after that because it's just too much build up at that point, you know. So
wait, don't do it the second to last match, man.
I'm with you. That did definitely feel like a momentum kill. I know we're
going out of order here, but
no. We'll actually get to that when we talk about it. But I do understand what you mean with the way the momentum did get killed by that. And we will absolutely address that when we get to it. But yeah, back to FTR versus Nigel McGuinness and Daniel Garcia, which is obviously the match we're talking about right now. And I mean, I got to say, Nigel, again, I wish he wrestled every week because honestly, I mean, he's great on commentary, but dude can still go in the ring. I don't care what anybody tries to tell me, you know?
No, he can.
And it just blows my mind that he could have been wrestling all these years and he just chose not to, you know? I mean, it's all up to him, you know what I mean? But I just, you know, what we could have had, you know, who just only knows, you know? And maybe we can have a little bit of it now. And I think this is a perfect example of it. I love how you mentioned Dax and how he was really great in this. I mean, he was doing all kinds of fun stuff. There was like a little potato to Nigel as soon as they got in with each other. He was just like, fuck you, bro. Fuck you, buddy. They were healing it up. You know what I noticed throughout this match? And it's something that I should have just like remembered, but like, you know, it's been so long in AEW since FTR were heels. So I'm sitting here watching them healing it up and it's just fucking so glorious. You know, you love them as baby faces, but man, are they so fucking good when they're bad guys, you know, like it is just glorious. And,
they're at their A game when they're heels for sure.
And Danny on the chase with this right now is actually, I think, you know, doing really good stuff as well. And I love Nigel getting thrown in the mix here. I love that Nigel and Danny are now allies and that Danny basically has allies on the commentary team. I hope they gas him up for like extra from now on, like because of this fucking
moment. That's a fun touch.
I love that idea. Dart, what did you think of this? I mean, obviously we had Dax being a little shit all throughout this and they were cheating it up and all kinds of fun little spots like that. What did you think about this, Dart?
Felt like I was watching an NXT pay-per-view back in the day. The FCR ooh, I like that. It up.
Yeah, I felt that a couple of times throughout this night, actually, I'll say.
It felt really NXT-like, but that was just the black and gold. That was the Ring of Honor before.
Yeah, like, it was the Ring of Honor on a national stage.
Yeah.
Essentially.
So, I mean, I like this match. I mean,
yeah,
I kind of didn't have, I paid attention to it, but it's FTR. They're heels. They're one of the better heels tag teams of all time, I want to say. And they're comedy. Charlie mentioned something in the pay-per-view about who is it? MJF. Having a blood feud together. And
they would create some mystical fucking moments together against each other because of how well they know how the timings of the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. No, that would be fun. And yeah, so good stuff there. Really, I'm pleasantly surprised with how much time it got. All right, Ricochet versus Mark Briscoe stretcher match, bloody violence, ass kicking extraordinaire. Ricochet got his first pay per view win in AEW. Love to see that. Dart, I'll toss it to you first here. Anything? First off, what did you think of the match? Were you expecting it to be this violent? And where does Ricochet go from here? First pay-per-view win. Look, he's one of the top heels in the company at this point. So trending in the right direction.
It was, I honestly didn't expect it to be that violent.
Neither did I, especially with Anarchy in the Arena on the same night.
But I know Ricochet and his scissors. But the visuals of Briscoe and the blood dripping and everything like that. It just made it was a good match. How long did this go? Do you know?
Tick over 16.
Okay, because it did not feel like that. It felt quick, and it felt just a. It's like quick violence. Throw him in an ambulance and let's go. Let's keep going. Ricochet. I hope it's trending towards a title, whether it's the TNT title.
I mean,
whatever
that would
title
be really
you
good.
Want to give him. You need to put a title on that man ASAP.
I mean, if we're laying seeds here for a plunder match at All In with a couple of those Don Callis guys, Ricochet picking up a pay-per-view win, you could have something really, really special, maybe in like a TNT ladder match type deal.
Mm-hmm.
Duke, Ricochet's first pay-per-view win. We've been talking about how big this is and for him to get this moment on pay-per-view. What'd you think of the match?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need Ricochet to be, like, leading a team into a blood and guts match after this, you know, like,
It'd be fun.
Like, or at least be on a team, maybe not leading it, but, you know, but I just like to imagine him being, you know, leading a faction of, like, assholes, you know, you know, like, because they wouldn't just be regular heels, they'd be straight up douches like him, you know, like, anyway.
Just take Yuta out of that group, and then just put MJF. Ricochet in.
Who else?
I mean, I'm telling you, I think there could be something with Crew if you wanted to form a group around him.
Throw Crew and MJF is just like a long.
Give me Ricochet and Leo in some matches.
Yeah, dude. Ooh, that'd be some fun. Imagine him as their third trio partner, dude. Oh yeah, dude. My God.
I can't wait till Bobby and Leo cross paths in AEW.
When they fucking face each other. Now they need to face each other.
Oh yeah, like when they actually get like one on one. Yeah, that could be magic for sure. But yeah, no, I mean, obviously there was a lot of stuff to like in this one, you know. There's you know, obviously the scissors are all over the place in this. There was one really fucking metal shot after the match.
Yeah,
where they showed bloody scissors with the bloody scissors next to it. And I don't know if somebody grabbed the scissors and sat that next to it, or if that's just where they landed after the spot. I like to believe that magic just happened. You know, like that's the kayfabe in my head that he just tossed them down there and it landed next to the pool of blood perfectly. You know, like yeah, great stuff. Stretcher match. It's the kind of gimmick match that I usually don't love, but in this context with like a guy like Mark Briscoe, I mean, of course, you know, for Mark Briscoe's gonna bleed all over the place and fucking.
Yeah, it's a fun match on paper, and it's two guys
set up for a great spot later in the night too.
Yeah, look, and it's two guys we constantly talk about that AEW wants to feature Mark Briscoe. They purposely put him in so many storylines, just like Ricochet. So it just makes sense for them to collide and have a singles match on the pay per view. I'll take it. So. This next one's pretty easy. Hurt Syndicate defeated the Sons of Texas. Nothing special here. We kind of knew that there was a 0.0% chance Sons of Texas were winning. No Cedric Alexander showing up. MJF was pretty fun. Lashley started vibing with him, taking his advice, and speared the shit out of Dustin Rhodes through a barricade at one point.
You know, I'll give Dart this. He said what when you said that is 0.0. They might have had a 0.1%. I think this is maybe the first team, Charlie, that like, on paper maybe could beat the Hurt Syndicate, but just not right now.
I was joking.
Yeah, no, there was no shot.
You don't think the team that has literally got two world champion, two tag team champions in Ring of Honor that AEW wouldn't just be like, fuck it, we ball.
If the booking had been different going into it, yeah, look, if they could have made us believe even a slight bit going into it, sure. But this was clearly just we're getting Dustin Rhodes on the pay-per-view. We're doing the Hurt Syndicate. These aren't our real challengers. You know, our real challengers will hopefully find by the time we get to All In. Is it going to be, you know, Cope and Cage? No idea. Who knows? But... yeah, there's
I'm just
really...
saying, Sammy Guevara has been known to win a championship when you don't expect him to. All the championships he currently holds, you know, like.
Yeah, so still don't think we have our true contenders for the Hurt Syndicate yet.
I don't know that we ever will. I'll keep it a buck.
We will. When it happens, we'll know. I mean, because there's seeds there for the Paragon. There's seeds there for FTR, but they just haven't even... thought about facing each other yet.
I cannot think of it. I mean, I know we think of them, but the Hurt Syndicate are heels. How are they facing FTR? Like,
our match.
You never know.
I have it. I'm
go ahead. What you got? Yep.
Edge and Christian. Sorry. Cope and Christian.
Cope and Cage, bro.
Cope and Cage. That's their name. Cope and Cage. They're going to beat Hurt Syndicate, but we... on a previous episode of your guys' podcast, when I was listening to Mowing the Lawn, you guys said FTR, this is the direction that they're going, is to win the tag titles by the end of the year.
Yep.
And Cage versus FTR.
I wonder which one of us said that. I'm curious.
I think both of you guys did.
Yeah, I probably agreed on it, I'm sure.
It's one of those things. It definitely feels like you're going to do Edge and Christian at some point. And FTR at All In made the most sense. Now, we have what? I'm just going to say 7 weeks. That's my assumption.
Yeah,
we have seven weeks. So we have time. You can do this. Again, we will know eventually who's going to beat the Hurt Syndicate when it happens. Like, we knew Private Party was going to win the titles. Bearing complete disaster. And sometimes you can just get a feel for what's going to happen.
They didn't win them when we thought they were going to win them.
Yeah, no.
That is true.
No. It's
2 weeks later.
Same with the Acclaim. Same with Swerve and Our Glory. Sometimes you don't know the exact moment, but you can usually get a vibe when they're winning.
100%. I'm with you.
So there was a really good pairing recently. Takeshita and Josh Alexander.
That maybe it could be them. Genuinely win the titles. Yeah, so, I agree. Yeah,
like the seeds are there, and we'll know it. So, all right, really, really good one here. We had Zuchika Okada versus Speedball Mike Bailey for the AEW Continental title. Look, it's fair to say you never know what Okada we're going to get. I hate that that's even a thing. Right, but all of us that have watched
it's
New Japan,
since New Japan, yeah, man.
No, but all of us that have watched New Japan, and we've seen Okada. Look, sometimes he's putting the money clip on for 35 minutes. That's just the way it is, you know. In the main event of the fucking dome, you never know what you're gonna get.
Can't believe that happened.
The second half of this match, after we laid the groundwork in the beginning half, Okada and Mike Bailey went out there and were legit putting on a New Japan type epic.
Yeah.
The final few minutes was unbelievable. I thought Okada looked on top of his A game. This is one of my favorite Continental defenses we've had. And Speedball Mike Bailey continues yet again to have a great match on pay-per-view. You know, Duke, welcome to the company. Here's Kenny Omega on pay-per-view. Oh, and here's Kazuchika Okada on pay-per-view. I think AEW likes this guy. What'd you think of the result? And look, what'd you think of this one?
I mean, obviously the result, I didn't expect Speedball to win here. It'd have been really cool. And there was a couple of pinfalls that I definitely bid on for sure, which we can talk about. But, you know, I'll specifically call the one out now. Okada, really great kick out. Unless I forget what move was hit, but it was a nice little 2.99 kick out, which everybody believed we've got a chance to win this. So he might have hit a crescent kick, actually. That would have made sense. You know what I mean? I'm not entirely sure, you know? Because he does set up for the ultimate weapon later, so he might have tried his first finisher that he's been using, you know, and maybe it didn't land. I'm not sure. Because Okada, I could see Okada kicking out of this guy's new move he's trying, right? You know? I don't remember exactly. I didn't write it down. But, yeah, I mean, you know, this is like Kazuchika Okada's, you know, hard-hitting Japanese main event style, right? With his little bit of submission sort of technical side that he picked up when he was, you know, in training with like the people in TNA and in Mexico or whatever. It's so funny. Okada and a few other guys in Japan went to Mexico, didn't learn lucha, but learned like submission wrestling. It's fascinating, you know?
Yeah.
Like
that whole other world over there.
100%. And their submission wrestling is fascinating. It's why Okada kind of doesn't really gel for a lot of people when they see him do that, because I'm sure that kind of stuff happens there too, you know?
And the money clip, he did not learn from them.
No, that's something he invented himself. He went to know. Okay, sidebar. He invented that move on his wife. I wish I was kidding. He tried that move out first on her.
The fucking money clip, man.
It's one of the greatest like TV clips that I ever saw come up into my feed because of wrestling. It was like a clip of Okada's, I think she's like a model or something, right? Like wife or something like that, on like a Japanese talk show. And they're like, yeah, this he debuted his new move at Wrestle Kingdom. And she's like, oh yeah, he tried that on me first. Fucking crazy. Anyway, I love Okada. He's great, you know, but I will say this, and it's something you kind of highlighted a little bit. This was a great defense. I don't know what's missing in the Okada title defenses, though. I can't really pinpoint it, you know? Like, it's something that, like, I don't know, this maybe hopefully reignites within him, you know? Because I think
a part of it is we're searching for an actual Okada story to happen.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, it sucks. It's going to be Kenny. That's literally who it's going to be. So that might be the story of the year for AEW, you know? Probably not with some of the stuff we've gotten with like Hangman. Like if Hangman ascends the title, good luck. But you know, just some notes from the match. Speedball's hard hitting, you know, explosive offense, that's what I'm going to describe it as from now on, because that's literally what it is. Kind of collides with Okada's like style that I mentioned. That's pretty much what I wanted to note here, because I feel like that is a huge, it's something that, you know, we saw when he was in the junior tournament, but like, I don't know that everybody on the American soil has seen what this guy can do when you put him against some of these guys. And we have a buttload of guys like that in AEW. So fucking rack him up. Let's go.
That last move there, when he went for that ultimate weapon again and Okada drop kicks in midair. I mean, that's the kind of folding shit that like you get from Pac, you know, Rainmaker flush, really great finishing sequence. And that was another Okada title reign. So live counter on his days. He's up to 427 days as champion right now.
All right, we need it to end.
Kenny needs to
delete this title. Come on, see you later.
Yeah, a
you
know? Little bit. All right.
We had a dart slot on. Did we get dart slot on the match?
Dart didn't see that one.
I did not see that one. I went to the bathroom in the middle of the match. The only thing that I saw from that match was the finish.
Oh, which, it was a sick finish, though.
Sick finish.
Yeah, copy. I didn't catch that, my bad.
So we had Timeless Toni Storm versus Mina Shirakawa for the AEW Women's title. Okay, Mina We want Mina. All about Mina. Mina, Mina, Mina. This is her best match in AEW.
Yeah.
This is without a doubt Mina's best match in AEW. This was really, really good. Look, they played up the thing where Mina was going after her leg constantly from Dynamite this week, right? The figure four played into the finish. Look, Mina is, she's a fucking technical wrestler, dude. She can do all of this. Toni Storm continues to have great matches on pay-per-views. That's why she's our ace. I'm not 100% sure where Mina goes from here. They shared a moment of passion with each other, of course.
Oh, hell yeah.
And yeah, like I said, I don't know where it goes from here, but I thought this was a pretty fun match. And this for me now is my favorite Mina match in AEW. So, Dart, what'd you think of this one? And yeah, Mina, she's officially on the roster Mina and rolling.
Well, I think I have to start with the ending segment of that match.
Yeah.
Charlie put it in great words. It was a sense of passion that they had.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you guys caught, but just before then, Mina did say, "What about Mariah?"
Ooh.
I saw it, and I saw it on Twitter, and I rewatched it a few times, and you can see them Mina say, "What about Mariah?" And then they shared that moment. I think that's where Mina goes. I don't foresee Mariah leaving at this point. I think that's where Mina goes. They have a little feud between her and Mariah, and yeah, the match is great. Typical Tony match. Not very familiar with Mina's game.
Yeah.
But Mina was great. Just overall great match, great pay per view match, and excited for Tony versus Mercedes.
That's the big one. That's absolutely the big one. And look, if Mariah does return,
mm-hmm.
you have so many things you could do. You could do the Jamie Hayter stuff. You could reignite with Mina. There's so many women's tag teams forming right now.
Oh,
you could fun with that.
I think I know what you do though. I think Tony loses her title, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's when Mariah shows up. And then they don't have to have the title for that to work, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think, you know, you have her involved, where, like, because, you know, you can have, you know, Mercedes walk out with the title, and then we center on Toni Storm, who's at the end of this incredible run, which she really deserves to have that moment at the end of this, I think, you know, but that's when Mariah comes out, and I think that's probably the way that you play that.
Mina Shirakawa on a pole match.
I'm down.
It could happen. Are you shocked that all Mariah didn't show up here?
Me?
Was there a part of you thinking maybe?
Possibly. Yeah, I guess this would be the match that it would make the most sense for her to show up in if she was going to.
Because
it's two people she's been the most involved with in AEW and in general in wrestling, obviously. So, you know, like, I obviously was kind of thinking in the back of my head, but I also wasn't against this just having its own time and getting its own match. So, you know, we had Mina hit some fucking pelvic sorcery at one point, you know. I thought it was, like, solidly hard-hitting, and there was some slightly comedic stuff in there, too, which, you know, is obviously a big part of what Tony's been doing recently, has been mixing the comedy with the, you know, the drama and wrestling, which is something that you don't really always see, you know? And I'm so amazed. We had two women's matches on this show with, like, incredible timing, great counter-wrestling, hard-hitting action, and I thought in this particular match, all their chain wrestling and, like, rolling pin combo attempts were, like, super smooth. And
yeah, Mina was looking so good in that.
You mentioned her being a technical wrestler. I got a comp for you, dude, and I was thinking about this while you were talking about it, and I don't know if everyone's going to agree with this, but it reminds me of how fucking Dolph Ziggler always fucking would make everybody else look so much better against him just by the way he would fucking sell for people and,
and when, like, he put on the Kent State fucking wrestling cap and embraced being a true wrestler.
Like, I don't know, like, because, like, what has Mina won since she's been in AEW that I can think of that wasn't, like, just a random ass match?
She hasn't won a lot. Mina hasn't had a lot of crazy opportunities yet.
But every match she's had, we've highlighted how great she looks. And what do we always say about Dolph? He looks great. It's just not his time to win or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
and this was her best. Before this, she wrestled against in the New Japan stuff, and she was always really good in that. But yeah, no, this was good stuff here. Well, let's get into the shit show here.
Ah, by that, shit.
By that, I mean the ultimate fun stuff. We had Anarchy in the Arena. Okay, there's a lot to talk about
Anarchy
here.
In the Arena 1776 edition.
Yeah. Okay.
January 6th edition.
Whoa!
Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, let's get that out of the way.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning, boys. I'm feeling frisky.
Feeling frisky. Dude, that like pirate just fucking horrible music. I hated it so much it actually sucked me out of the match.
It was
for
so
a couple
bad
minutes.
It could have been a Kairi Sane theme back in like 2017.
I thought Charlie was turning the pay per view off.
I was so just was bad. There's no way we're doing this.
You called it too. When they came out to it, you're like, there's no way this is going to be the music that they put. And sure enough, it kept playing. And
It's like they no-sold Joe not coming out with the rest of his team also. Like, what was that about? I didn't understand the idea is, oh, he was waiting for them hiding in the crowd or whatever. But I was like, wait, come on, man. Like, that telegraphed that was going to be the terrible music.
No, they didn't no-sell it.
And he was
asking. Kenny was asking, where the fuck's Joe?
Okay, fine.
And then, bam, Joe basically put...
But here's the good thing. That's the only bad part of the match, was that horrible music playing for like 4 minutes. Because then... Fucking, we hit the what is it, down straight or who drowning pool? Let the bodies hit the floor repeatedly.
Yeah, that's not what I expected.
It was fucking metal.
Well, there was a song in between that. What song was that?
Yeah, that's right. That was pretty fun. Yeah,
yeah.
And we had a great Taz moment, which allows me to play this. Hold on. We had brilliant Taz singing along with "I'm so excited."
Remix Jones made an appearance,
yeah, so he showed up on the pay-per-view. But look, okay, so we had returns. Hook returned, and he looks like he's got a little beef with the Ops.
I mean, Hook returned for what, all of 2 minutes?
Yeah, Hook was back, and he said, "I."
But there's a story there. We haven't ever. Joe was trying to like bring him into the ring, and Hook's like, "Nah, man." So Hook might have took it personally that they replaced him with Hobbs. Look, there's some Team Taz there, too. So remember, he might not be too happy with Hobbs. So that there could be more elements to that.
If that next feud for the two of them, like if the Ops are going to like pause on the trios for a little bit and we get a little mini feud between Hook and Hobbs to like settle the beef, that could be good for both of their careers.
It could be fun. Like. Yeah. Oh. Ultimately, they need to get him back in the picture. Hook needed this.
Yeah, they're the Ops. They settle their beef in the ring. That's exactly what I expect Joe to say.
They settle it in the ring. They just need to have a bloody fuck fest. There we go.
Whoa.
What?
What?
Okay, by the way, Shivani's liner of Hobbs taking the staple to the head. And he's like, what do you think that's going to do to him? He's been shot before.
Oh, yeah.
Literally. That's crazy.
I mean, just start calling spots that you guys want to talk about. I mean, the staple gun was nuts.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that.
Swerve wrestling like half the match with a staple in his tongue. Like,
that's
fuck.
Ridiculous.
That guy's a sick freak. He's a sick guy.
Hey, everything with Shibata was safe.
Yes. It has to be, you know.
Again, more proof. Just like Danielson, right? You can wrestle these matches and not take bad bumps. And still have
proof
it be
of this
epic.
Is Sting. I know Sting didn't wrestle, I don't think, in an Anarchy in the Arena, I don't believe, right? But he wrestled one of the... Did he? Yeah. Okay, I couldn't remember. Yeah, so there you go. Sting's been in these matches before. So
Sting jumped from the top and was just down for like 20 minutes.
They took him out one big spot. And you know what? They used him perfectly for that. You know, if Jeff Jarrett, not that I ever wanted to be in one of these matches, but if he was, they would know how to use him and take him out perfectly. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, that's all I'm saying, you know? Please don't put Jeff Jarrett in one of these, fuck.
I mean, my favorite spot... Actually, there was a lot. There's so many good ones. I was just laughing throughout this whole thing because it was the comedic timing of everybody. The way they were picking up the pace as the song picked up pace.
It was.
How about fucking Swerve getting fucking Claudio spun into the fucking speaker to end the music? That was fucking metal.
That was metal. It was a good way to stop the music.
We kept saying, "Dude, you're getting too close. You're getting too close." And that was the spot. It was great.
He threw it in. My favorite spot was there is the exploding table, and
that was great.
Then the swerve stomp with the thumbtacks. Those were two very
good
spots.
That was nasty.
My all-time favorite was the 1776 outfits by the Young Bucks.
I can't believe the rest of the whole match in that.
Props to them for wrestling that match in that.
Also, our first time with women in this match.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they did great.
They had some intergender spots.
Kenny.
Intergender spots. I mean, you know, you're not going to get that in the Fed, but I mean, we'll get it here.
This is true.
We'll take it.
Look, and they had their one-on-ones outside by the trash. You have bottles getting smashed, table spots. They're also just throwing good punches with each other straight up. So that impacted that.
It was a stapler to the dick.
Yeah.
Oh, I called that shit. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. When Swerve finally got the stapler in his hand, that was so great. He was just tapping everybody. Yeah, that was really good.
How about the Gabe Kidd of it all?
That was such a...
This is the weakest part, right?
That might have been the worst part of the match, honestly.
He felt so shoehorned into this.
Why the hell did they bring him up on Wednesday?
You just had to do it. And like it just felt like it was so just like thrown in there randomly.
Yeah.
I even think Mark Briscoe being in this match makes more sense because he was just chilling in the ambulance, you know?
And can I just add this? I think the Gabe Kidd element would have been a fucking mega shock at the end if he shows up, because then we're questioning so much more. But why bring him up on Wednesday?
Yeah, no, it should have been a shock.
And not put him in the match.
Yeah,
that's the thing I can't believe.
Yeah, if we're gonna do this at the pay per view, we should not have had him come out on. Yeah, actually, yeah, straight up.
So you could have easily had him take someone's spot. Yuta didn't do a lot. Mox didn't do a lot. I will say Claudio, I think, did the best of the Death Riders in this match. Yeah. But Yuta and Mox were, I mean, what did Mox do that's really memorable here?
Wrestled a typical Jon Moxley match.
He didn't do too much, right?
Somehow he wrestled a typical Mox match in Anarchy in the Arena. This man, he does it time in and time out, and I expected it. It was rear naked chokeholds. It was like bulldog, everything, dude.
Yeah, his best spot was stabbing Powerhouse with the thing on the top of the head. That was it. When he's embracing that side, it works the best. But ultimately, you know, he was about to get beaten by Joe, and look, it was Yub Nub at the end.
If Deathmatch John would have came out, would have been good.
Swerve got his vengeance on the Bucks. This should end Swerve in the Bucks. Should. So we'll have to see where that goes. But
it'll end Swerve in the Bucks, but it'll begin Swerve in Our Glory versus the Bucks.
It could. I don't know where. See, Swerve has an open book right now.
Where is Keith Lee?
He's still hurt.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever coming back.
I don't think he's ever wrestling again. He's still recovering from that COVID stuff.
Yeah, I believe this is going off of stuff we've read online, so take it with a grain of salt.
I'm sorry,
Keith, I believe it was long-term COVID stuff, and it really fucked him up when he tried to return. So that stuff's no joke. It's no joke. That's the worst. One of the worst things about COVID. If it didn't straight up fucking kill you, the long-term effects were still being discovered.
Because that's what Bray had, right?
Bray was dealing with stuff from that too.
Yeah,
and ultimately,
I believe Bray had like other long-term health issues that he was dealing with.
Yeah, it just added
got
on
exacerbated.
To it.
I guess I think he got COVID. I don't think he got COVID just once either. I think he got it like multiple times. I could be misremembering, but I think I remember hearing that, like he.
But that's why a lot of people got so sick during that era, and why it was such a fucking insane time.
Yeah.
So
didn't leave the house.
Okay, and then we have probably the most forgettable match we'll ever
sports.
We'll ever we have the most forgettable match we'll ever fucking cover, and that is Paragon versus the Don Callis family. Look, here's the thing. They're in the worst spot ever, right? In between Anarchy in the Arena and the main event match of two of the best wrestlers on this earth. So they go out there. Here's the thing. And I always like to mention this when it comes to these types of matches. If you watch this in like a week, completely out of context, you're going to have a whole different vibe for this match than you did right now. And that's just the brutal reality of this, because they were actually in their bag in this match. Like, Takeshita was beating the ever-living fuck out of everyone. Kyle Fletcher was looking great. Adam Cole is seriously on a roll. And it's...
I like what you did with Ryan.
Hopefully he gets an opportunity to actually defend this belt and do something with it, because it really feels like they should be going after the ops, but they're not. So that's fine. Fletcher hit a brainbuster on Kyle O'Reilly for the win.
That's Fletchmeister the 14th to you, sir.
Yeah, after Takeshita popped him with his beautiful right. But the main thing here is post-match, okay? Archer and RPG Vice join their crew. They're beating up the Paragon, standing tall. Brody King's music hits. Massive pop. Tomohiro Ishii and Hiroshi Tanahashi's music hits, and he joins the party. Holy shit, Chance. Fletcher was the last man standing. Sling Blade, boom, you name it. And the main note here also, Excalibur specifically, and he always does this for a reason, mentions Forbidden Door. So, doesn't mention that with Gabe Kidd, which makes me believe he will show up on AEW a little more this summer, right? Before the G1, there's some time. I'm assuming if Dominion still booked the 12th like it used to be, that's right around the corner. I don't think he's doing anything there, unless he already is. But yeah, Duke, what'd you think of all this? Is this just all seeds for, you know, we clearly set up some seeds for some tournament with Kenny, with Brody King and stuff like that. But
yeah,
I mean, what'd you think of Tanahashi showing up? And this all but confirms what Collision did with Fletcher probably targeting Adam Cole, maybe not Fighter Fest, but maybe the week or two after.
Yeah, I mean, they could be saving that maybe even for an all-in match or something like that. You never know. But, like they may, like, drag it out and, like, maybe they even have multiple matches for the title, you know, kind of like Adam Cole and Daniel Garcia did, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It really depends on what direction they want to go in. I do think this is a lot of setup for Forbidden Door here at the end. And, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, you literally have Excalibur saying that, but I think more than I even realized within the contents of this match. And I guess that makes sense because, you know, Konosuke, for the most part, most of the stuff that he's been doing that has been crazy this year has been in Japan, you know, like, so
yeah,
like it makes a lot of sense. I do think that Konosuke will have some kind of big defense on Forbidden Door this year against who I don't know, you know,
it's Forbidden Door's 3 months away.
It's but interesting that we're getting that.
They're going to make it a big deal still. Up.
Yeah. I, you know,
so,
Tanahashi, I honestly did not expect to see him on this show. It kind of was mind-blowing.
No, yeah, I think that's just for fun. That's a legit shock. That's just for fun for the crowd, too.
100%, yeah. Tanahashi making the trip while he's doing the Super Juniors. Unbelievable, you know?
Yeah. Bro's actively doing that.
Literally.
He'll probably be wrestling on there
in the next couple nights, as crazy as that sounds.
Which we've been covering on this podcast. We have special Super Juniors shows, if you guys are interested in that.
First 8 nights reviewed already.
Yeah, Dart, anything you wanted to add from this one before we jump into this insane main event?
I'd like to just get to this main event.
Let's fucking do it, because we had an all-time main event in AEW here. Okay. Hangman Adam Page, Will Ospreay. We've talked ad nauseum, especially on our predictions, right, about how, the importance of this match. We talked for like 20 minutes on this singular match, just going over and finding new reasons on why the result should be the way it is, on what happens if it isn't, this, that, and the other. We really convinced ourselves.
Into it pretty hard on that episode. Yeah.
We really convinced ourselves why Hangman has to win. And the crowd, they've been sitting there for 4 hours, some of them for six. They're giving it their all. They're giving this match every ounce it fucking deserved. They bit on every false finish, every high impact move, the callbacks to their old rivals. The crowd was going along with it. And even the stuff that wasn't as clean, right? There was a table situation where it broke. Didn't matter. They still recovered, moved on. They were absolutely, this is a match of the year candidate for AEW right away. They got 36 minutes. It flew by, and an incredible end to the best pay-per-view of AEW's year so far, in my opinion. Duke, I'm tossing it to you first. And of course,
yeah,
Hangman Adam Page won the match in brilliant style. What did you think of this one? And it's happened. Hangman versus Mox.
It's happening. It is happening. At All In. We saw the graphic, and the graphic looked glorious. All right. So the pinned skeet on my Blue Sky account at Bane Duke, if you want to follow me, is Hangman Adam Page will win the world championship again. And on that day, AEW fans will rejoice. It only got like 86 likes. Only 86, right? You know? And I let me look at what date that went out on. Exactly 3 months ago, I tweeted that out. That was before Hangman was even in the cup, you know?
Yeah.
Or even being talked about in the cup. I could feel something at the beginning of this year with Hangman. And I didn't know for sure that it was going to be this year when I tweeted that, you know, but I did know that I was correct about that, you know, and we had talked, I think, a little bit before that on the podcast about how Hangman was going to win the championship, maybe this year, maybe next year, you know, but he was going to be one of the next people to win it. And we talked about like Swerve and a few other people are going to win the championship. Darby Allin. We got some names we've listed off. But I don't think the path has ever been clearer than it is right now. And I love Will Ospreay. But much like when Swerve was champion, it's just not time for Ospreay to be the guy yet, you know? It will be soon. But we have to take this Death Rider shit and make it all worth it, you know? Like, and let me be the first person to be a defender of the Death Riders, as I have been. I made it my storyline of the year last year, you know? Or maybe my feud of the year. Feud of the year was something else. Yeah, definitely storyline of the year. And so I won't sit here and say like it was all bad, but we do need to have some kind of big cap off to it. And the redemption of Hangman Adam Page is, I can't think of a better story. The Ascension of Will Ospreay is a great story. It is a story we will tell one day, you know? But right now, Hangman Adam Page, who has gone to the darkest depths of his soul to try and figure out just what he is now that the things that have happened to him since his battles with Swerve, it needs to all come to a head at All In. And I'll talk about the match a little bit, actually. I mean, you know, I have a ton of notes about it, so I don't want them to go to waste. You know, I just wanted to bring up that thing about Hangman because, like, I've been feeling this in my soul all year. It's something that I, you know, way before it became the thing that everyone said that Hangman had to win this, I think my brain was already kind of there, even though I wasn't thinking about the Owen Hart tournament at the time, you know? Like, there was some absolutely great stuff in this. I mean, it's two of the three best wrestlers in the company, maybe in the world, you know? Just fucking lighting each other up with this. Something you guys mentioned, the lighting vibes, or I think you were the one that pointed this out. The lighting looked really sick during this match. I'm sure that was done on purpose, but it just looked cool. You know, they kind of elevated it a little bit. Yeah.
Elevated it.
It reminded me of when NXT Black and Gold used to do that thing with the lights right before the main events, you know? Like, yeah. Anyway. I like that they, like, early on tried to take shots at each other. They were like, finish, boom, finish. And it didn't actually land, you know? And it was like, all right, so we're not going to win this quickly. We're trying to do, like, it's not even a feeling each other out process. It was like, higher elevated than that. It was like, they were like, they both know how big this is. So they're trying to take that shot as quickly as they can. It just didn't land, you know? Maybe if they hit it, maybe it actually win, you know? But maybe not, you know? Will, I don't remember what exactly the move was, but there was a spot where Will got absolutely leveled and just laid out. Absolutely great sell by Will on that. Will hits a Sasuke special in this, which, I mean, how many times has he ever even really hit that in AEW, Charles? It's got to be one of the few times he's done it, you know? Like,
yeah, and he immediately rolls it into the torture rack, you know?
Oh, it's like Japan Will is back.
It's when we talk about those transitions of Will Ospreay and why when people say always matches feel the same, I always feel like it's so lazy to say that. Like he knows how to incorporate transitions so well that no match ever feels the same to me. But yeah,
my absolute favorite spot of this match was the fucking showdown at High Noon where Will fucking called his shot and said, I'm going Hidden Blade. And he was setting up for the fucking, and he pulled off the elbow pad. And then fucking Hangman, who set up for a fucking a buckshot, also pulls off the elbow pad. And they do a fucking duel, a fucking quick draw. And then fucking Hangman fucking kills him with a goddamn buckshot. And then he kicks out. And then he gets up, hits him with a fucking Hidden Blade instantly as he's trying to hit another buckshot. And then hits him with a fucking Stormbreaker. And then he kicks out.
Yeah, it's shit like that when we're talking. If you want to reach the epic levels, that is it. Like, you've built to that. You built to that within the match alone, you know? So, and AEW is getting really experimental with the camera shots again, and there was multiple times in this match alone where they held the Steadicam like for 40 seconds at a time, and they did this a lot with Ricochet and Mark Briscoe too. So it adds to it. It adds to the immersion that you're searching for within a match like this. It's something New Japan does all the time, and they do it so fucking well. Yeah, we can keep talking about this forever. Dart, what did you think of this one? I mean, you weren't as locked in at the beginning, it felt like, as Duke and I when we were saying Hangman needs to win. Did you feel that way by the end? And what'd you think of this, dude? I mean, you nailed it. You were like, we're going to have a fucking classic here. 6-star banger. Ding, 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 ding.
You literally said that right as the fucking bell was about
to ring. You might be right.
Kind
this
of
might be six.
I said it from the get-go.
Yeah, this might be six. 6-star
didn't care who won, but by the end, obviously, Hanger needed it.
Okay, not to interrupt there, but what I just want to point out is what that means is that this match told such a brilliant story throughout that it made you believe that. That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's two of the best. I mean, anytime Will Ospreay is against somebody, I'm expecting 4.5 at least. But the match itself, obviously, it spoke for itself. The stories that were told, you guys hit it with the callbacks to the finishers.
Yes.
My absolute favorite was the showdown of all showdowns. I kind of wish they did a what is it where they go back to back and walk
five
steps?
Like the duel thing. Yeah. Oh yeah, that would have been sick. That would have been a little bit too on the nose, and people would have bitched about it. But I'm with you.
Was it Bandido that did that?
Yeah, Bandido did do that, and people, I'm sure, complained about it because it was, you know, indies.
And that's what they needed to do. They were in Arizona, and maybe Texas. I'm gonna. You guys didn't mention the Styles Clash onto the apron.
Onto
the floor. Thank God Hangman did not tuck his head a la James Ellsworth.
Yeah.
But I mean, it spoke. And I, by the time the match ended, I came around to what they were saying. Hangman needed it. I would have been fine if Will won it, but Hangman needed that.
Yeah. Ascension versus redemption. It became a tagline. And I would love to know who, and maybe we could learn this as soon as, you know, this year, or it might take a while, but you always wonder who makes these pitches. And whoever made that pitch, if it was Hangman or Will, or if it was an agent, or if it was Tony Khan himself, you know, could have been fucking, it could have been anyone. It could have been Sky Blue that made this pitch, right? She had an idea. You never know. AEW always listens to everyone.
RJ City's had good ideas before.
It could have been RJ. Could have been anyone. Whoever made that pitch for this to be the what created the match, so good. And when they were going through pro wrestling history, where Ospreay's teasing the Styles Clash, and he's getting countered into Angel's Wings from Christopher Daniels, right? You have all these different generations and the One Winged Angel into the Big Pressure, like all of it. It worked so well. I'm just so glad that, again, because here, let's play devil's advocate here. There will be people, and they'll rightfully have this opinion, and that's this will be a fine opinion to have. Why do they keep putting Ospreay in these big spots just to have him lose? Are we missing out on potential Ospreay? You know, he could be a multi-time champion by now. Right? Say he beats Swerve when he does, or, you know, he's the world champion already. He keeps losing in these big spots. Could that ultimately affect Ospreay down the road? And he's only been in the company, what, 14 months now? That's insane. So,
yes.
Wow.
And
yeah,
but in that time, he's been a champion, and he had one of the best title runs with that title since he's been here. So, like, I don't even, you know, like, I think that it's also a weird conversation to have about Will, because even if Will was injured for 8 months and then came back, as long as he wasn't incapable of wrestling the current style that he's wrestling, then I think he would be fine, because Will is one of those guys that is so good. You cannot help. You could show anybody a Will Ospreay match, and unless they just don't give a shit about wrestling and find it to be lame or something like that, they're going to find something to like about watching a Will Ospreay match. Because he's so damn good that you don't even have to hear him say a word. His wrestling in the ring speaks for itself, and it has for a decade now or something like that, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, his New Japan world title reign was 46 days, ended due to injury. I mean, he's never really been given a chance to take a world title and run with it. And now it definitely feels like there's going to be a little bit of time here where he's going to be out of the picture again. I don't know, Dart is... Because it's almost the opposite of Hangman, right? But they're still putting Ospreay in big spots. Is that enough? Is Ospreay just one of those guys where it doesn't matter what he's going for, what he's doing? It's fucking Will Ospreay. He's going to have the match of the night no matter what, you know?
He's going to have the match of the night, but he's also going to tell the best story that he can. It's kind of like... I mean, currently what we're going through in the WWE with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns doesn't need the title. We've always said that the Bloodline story never needed the title.
Never needed it.
I think Will and Roman are kind of the same. Like, they don't necessarily need the title to tell their story. They don't to have the best matches. Will go out there day in, day out, put in the best work of his career, night in, night out.
We're talking having 5.5-star matches on Dynamite, not even the main event.
He could be going for a chicken nugget in a fucking shark cage. And he'd still go out there and put 5.5 stars, and he would care. That's just Will Ospreay. Soon he'll get his time. I hope it's soon. That he gets his world title and just absolutely runs with it. Because that man deserves it.
He does. And look, now when we're looking on the horizon, right? Because now it definitely feels like there's a light here where Hangman's the next champion. And I'm trying to peek beyond that. And I'm like, it's not as obvious as it might have been.
Yeah, like 3 months ago, they would have said Swerve, but I don't know.
Could say maybe Swerve. That would feel like the best pick. But it's like, is it?
Darby Allin is an option.
We got to go back to
Darby Allin's got to win. Actually, no, I take it back. Darby Allin does have to win the world title after he comes back from Everest. That is a thing that you're never going to have a more time to put Darby Allin.
It's just how long
that.
Can it wait? Does Hangman have? Hopefully, we get to the point where we start doing the shorter reigns. That
I don't
makes
think
all
Hangman's
of this
redemption
easy.
Should end quickly, though, right? Like that's a thing.
That's the thing. That's the wall, right?
And if you're trying to turn Hangman back face, which you have already done with him coming back and shaking Will's hand, the babyface turn's probably 99% complete.
Yeah.
You can't have Darby come back, beat him for the title, going face versus face. I just don't like it. It might be a personal opinion.
Yeah, no, I think unless Hangman loses, I think Darby's window's closed for a bit now, more than Ospreay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think
MJF route.
MJF has been in the conversation all year, so MJF definitely has to get a shot this year, I think, at some point, especially now that he's aligned with the Hurt Syndicate. That feels like it needs to have. MVP needs to get him a match, you know what I mean? Or he needs to get a match and to prove to them or something. Because that even could set up for MJF versus Bobby if he does win the title, right? So, which is obviously a match that's probably going to happen this year, regardless of whether the championship happens for it, right? You know? So MJF is...
I mean, Jay White's the only person that's got his number, but Jay's still hurt, right?
Not to win it, but is Chris Jericho someone that could contend for the title this year? You know, like...
God, I hope not.
Yeah, I don't... I think Windows... We talk about Windows closing. I don't think Jericho's getting another shot at this world title. I think
that's why it's going to happen, because we think that, and so therefore it will happen.
No, it's Chris Jericho. I mean, hold on. Jeff
Copeland
Jarrett did get a chance, so it's like...
Jeff Jarrett got a chance. You can do it on TV. Are those guys' windows closed? Christian Cage and Adam Copeland, are they done?
That is something... I'm still stuck on the Copeland one.
He wanted to run it back with Swerve if he won the title. If Swerve goes on to win that title, that match will happen. I mean, at least it should.
But Look, if Hangman loses the title match, I think Darby's the next. We all agree Darby's the next champion.
I hope.
I mean, if Hangman loses, it's got to be Darby.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, it bothers me that I'm stuck on this Everest thing, because I think I'm right. I don't know that you ever have a moment that Darby's going to be more be able to be put over than I just climbed Mount Everest and then came back.
I mean, I can see the point there, but I can also see that just being a case for him going after Adam Cole or something. Or you know, I don't know.
I mean, it's like a fucking accomplishment most people are never going to make in their life. I just don't know how you don't then like.
It's just Darby's story so directly tied with Moxley. And look, the fact that we're able to have this many talks about it, I think it shows the world title scene's fucking in a really great spot. It really is. We have the overarching evil of Jon Moxley, who, yes, out of the gate, it was awesome. And then it really stumbled for a couple months. But he's picked it back up. And I think the lowest point was, unfortunately, the pay-per-view Dart and I both went to was World's End. That was the lowest point of Moxley's title reign. That was the lowest point for him when he walked out to no one reacting to him. No one wanted him to win. It was a four-way. Everyone was just like kind of sick of it.
I left.
We were all so sure.
I wasn't
there. He was
there.
Losing the title that night.
We've been so sure about him losing the title three separate times, Garrett. And it hasn't happened.
But look, now we're in a spot where we have options. And here's the great thing, too. There's so many fucking champions. Or there's so many championship-level guys. So, Adam Page, look. The run of this year that he's had, singles matches here now, Ospreay, incredible, Fletcher, great, Alexander, great, MJF, great, couple jobbers here and there, the retirement of Christopher Daniels, and then he opened the year with the Orange Cassidy match. I mean, it's been a great year for Page. I look forward to All In. That's the next AEW pay-per-view, so keep an eye out for that. If this is your first time checking us out, we have our weekly show, where we talk about our favorite stuff that happened on AEW. We talk about some of the latest news. And we just literally talk about Dynamite and Collision in full. And it's a great time. So if you're interested in that, we have our weekly show that drops on Tuesdays. So follow us on whatever platform you're on. We would greatly appreciate that.
We won't have an episode for you this week because of this pay-per-view review. But there will be an episode of the Super Juniors review. So if anything happens in AEW that like we need to talk about, obviously, you know, like that's not like on the next episodes. Like obviously that would be the next, the Wednesday coming after when the Tuesday podcast would come out.
So we'll get to that at the next weekend.
Yes. But if something crazy happens that was worth talking about, like Mariah May, you know, goes off of and goes signs with WWE or some crazy like that, we'll probably talk about that on the Super Junior show. So don't get it twisted. If something crazy happens that's not on the show, we'll definitely probably like some news breaks.
Before we end this, can we talk about some wrestling news?
Sure. Today? If you have something,
I just want to say a NXT or WWE superstar winning a TNA world title is something that I never thought I would say.
Yeah.
Trick Williams beat Joe Hendry today at NXT Battleground. Shocked that Battleground went up against Double or Nothing, but Trick Williams beat Joe Hendry for the TNA World Championship, and the TNA president looked at Trick Williams with just disgust. He was like, what does my company become? Kind of like, you know, one guy wins the title, like different promotion, kind of like they did with Kenny and the TNA. They're trying everything in their power to get it back onto their brand.
Yeah. Get it back onto our guy.
Yeah. That's the look. It wasn't anything like crazy, but that was the look. And I thought that was a good touch that the camera crew picked up on.
And here's what I'll say too for Trick. I'll add to this. Trick is someone that people give him a lot of shit on can he be someone to actually contend for the world title on the main roster? Can he be someone that can elevate himself? He needs to get reps. That's something you always hear with Trick Williams. He needs reps, reps, reps. He's very
raw. He has the aura. He has everything. But
he's got everything that you want for the superstar, to be the big guy. But he needs more reps in the ring. And getting the TNA World Championship on an NXT guy is fucking huge for him, for starters. And that also shows how committed TNA is to really wanting to get this to work. I think they're very, they have some massive problems at TNA, Tessa, but they're trying to make this work. So, yeah, no, it's cool for Trick. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. And I personally, I'm rooting for Trick. I don't like how much shit he gets. I never have. I've always been like, just give him a chance.
That's all you ask for certain people is just give him a chance.
And when it mattered most, when you stuck him out there with one of the best wrestlers in all of North America, Ilya Dragunov, when you stuck him out there with him, they had a good match. So to me, if you're looking for a bar at some point, I think that's something you can always look to. So, but yeah, get him some more reps, and TNA is a good way to do it. So, yeah.
I think we've covered everything.
I think that's it. Duke, we all, anything else you want to add for the show? Anything I'm missing maybe? We got a book review coming out.
Yeah, we have
The Last of Us. Last of Us finale review. If you guys care about that show at all, if you've been keeping up with that, ESE Fantasy is our other podcast.
And we actually haven't even recorded that yet.
Yeah.
Which we haven't seen the show. So you're catching us before, if you're listening to this show, before we've even seen that. So if you saw that, if you skipped out on Double or Nothing to watch The Last of Us, first of all, what the fuck? Second of all, you know, we don't know yet. So
yeah.
we are not knowers.
We will we'll have that up. But thank you very much. There was a ball. So thank you very much for checking out our show. Duke, Dart, awesome show tonight. Thanks, guys, for
balls,
for hopping in here. This was fun. And we will catch you all on the flip side.
And I will see you guys in 7 weeks.
7 weeks!
That's one more than six.
Uma. I love Wardlow.